Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
Welcome to Resource People Podcast. I'm Tara Diamond from AMA, your host, and today it is fantastic to bring you a conversation with Dr. Max Hills, the Chief Medical Officer at Chevron. In this episode, we go in depth on how one of the world's leading integrated energy companies has handled the COVID-19 health pandemic in Australia. We chat about Chevron's approach to COVID-19 and how it has adapted and developed its approach as the challenges and opportunities continue to evolve. Hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to Resource People Podcast, Max.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me, Tara.
Wonderful. Well, before we get into the nitty-gritty of our conversation today, I'd love for you to give our listeners an overview of Chevron, in particular in Australia, how many people it employs and its operations.
Chevron is a global energy company. We've got operations all around the world. In Australia, we employ more than 2,500 people. And we engage a similar number of contractors to support our operations. That number of contractors goes up and down depending on campaigns like maintenance and similar operations. We've been operating here in Australia for over 50 years. On Barrow Island, we have an oil operation. And more recently, we are focusing on provision of natural gas to Western Australia and liquefied natural gas to our partners in the region. And we do that through two operated LNG facilities, one on Barrow Island and one at the Wheatstone site near Onslow.
Fantastic. And what about you? What about your background and what areas you focus on in your role as Chief Medical Officer at Chevron?
So I'm a general practitioner, a doctor by training, and I work as the Chief Medical Officer for Chevron Australia. And in that role, I support our health and medical team to do really three main things. Mm-hmm. The first is to provide medical services to our personnel at remote sites. So we, as I said, we operate these LNG facilities and oil facilities. They're all very remote locations. And there are no real state-provided health services in those locations. And so we provide all of the ambulances, doctors, nurses, paramedics, medical clinics, and all the equipment that's needed to look after people at those locations. We also operate a fitness for duty program that ensures that people who we're deploying to these locations meet the medical requirements to do so and that any medical risk can be addressed. And linked to that, we've got an injury and illness management program. So if people do become ill or injured, either work-related or non-work-related, we support them to get optimal care and we support them to return to work as best they're able, because we find that when people return to work, they can really get some of those health benefits that come from work, such as quicker recovery, a more sustained recovery, and it's better for their mental health. And then finally, we operate a wellness program where we provide supports for the mental and physical health of our workforce, both here in Perth and also on our remote sites.
So a lot, and a lot in the last few years. Thank you so much for that overview. And I really want to start then getting on to the meat of our conversation, which of course is the impacts of COVID-19 and really what I'm sure has been a huge focus for you and your role and your team in the past 2 years. Can you give us some insight into how the pandemic has really affected your role, affected the work that you and your team do?
Oh, yes, it certainly has had a major impact on the role. It feels a bit like when you have a baby. You wonder what you were doing before you had the baby when you weren't changing nappies and feeding them all the time. And it's a bit like that with COVID-19. We've had our daily work really transformed by this pandemic. We now have weekly meetings of the EMT. We operate a number of safeguards to protect our people at our remote sites and in our offices. And we're being constantly vigilant for changes in the public health picture, both here in Australia and internationally. It's involved us looking at new technologies, both in the healthcare and but also in the administration type spaces. And we've really had to up our game in that area. And I think for the team, for the health and medical team, people have really needed to work together to address these issues as they've come up. It's involved people working outside of their normal hours. It's involved people doing different things than they would have done previously. It's a fantastic team I work with, so I've been very fortunate that we've been able to come together to address the issues as they've come up. but it really has had a major impact.
Yeah, absolutely. Great analogy there as well, because you don't know what you don't know when you're traversing new territory. And then I want to take us back, though, to really the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. Hopefully you're able to recall that long ago, because it does feel like a long time ago, when how the pandemic initially really impacted the company and the workforce. Things like the types of changes to rosters that had to happen as we went into lockdowns and all of those sorts of things. Can you take us back to really the initial response and the initial impact?
Yeah, I can remember it quite well, actually. I was away on holidays at the beginning of 2020 when there were these first reports of cases and, you know, we were discussing it as a family, and that was sort of the level of it at that time. And then almost immediately I was in the States on business again, last time we could do that for a while. And we were seeing these reports of cases arising in China, but also in other countries in this region. So we very quickly realized that something was going on. You know, there was a respiratory virus capable of efficient human-to-human transmission. It didn't appear to have been contained at the source. And we were now looking at a situation where this was likely to expand into a global pandemic, which is what we then subsequently saw. We had an idea in the health and medical team. I remember discussing it with my medical services supervisor at the time that this was going to take off. And consequently, we were pretty quick to implement some restrictions on people going to our remote sites, which we felt were our most vulnerable assets. Mm-hmm. And so we put in some restrictions on people who had been at various locations overseas, going to those sites immediately. And likewise, similar restrictions on people coming into the office. And that did have a benefit, actually, in those early days, because we had a number of people who had been traveling internationally, including a person who unfortunately contracted COVID during one of those early overseas visits. And so we saw the value of that from the very beginning, and we implemented it. And it came with it a whole raft of other controls that were new to people. Social distancing, obviously people wash their hands, but it's this frequent hand sanitizing. And then these setting expectations, which I think people had kind of got a bit relaxed about prior to the pandemic, such as don't come into work if you're sick. I think people saw the value in that, in those measures. And so we had great compliance from our workforce in those areas. Subsequent to that, I remember that one of the big issues for us was we had a number of international vessels that come to our operations to load cargo. And we need to put a pilot and various other personnel onto those vessels during the time that they're at our sites. And of course, they would then be mixing with people who had come from these overseas countries. And so I remember one of the early things that we did was we implemented a number of safeguards around the PPE and other things that, that those marine pilots and other loading operators were doing to minimize the risk of COVID-19 at our locations. And then, of course, fairly quickly after that, we saw some fairly substantial restrictions on initially people coming in and out of Australia and people then coming in and out of Western Australia. And obviously, our operations are all based in Western Australia. In Western Australia, we needed to change the roster patterns because we had no way of bringing people to our sites. And we were concerned that if we did bring people to the sites, that they may carry with them COVID-19 in those early days. So our workforce really did work with us on this. And after a period of consultation, we implemented some extended roster patterns to minimize the movements, if you like, between places where there might be COVID and our sites, which we were trying to protect. And thanks to the engagement of our workforce, we were able to switch over to those longer rosters. But I don't think we should underestimate the impact that that has, not just the extended length of time people are working, but also the change and the plans you had being disrupted and the impact that has on people's sort of ability to rest and recharge and rejuvenate between work periods. If it's disrupted and unpredictable, that makes it much more challenging. And so we again looked at what we could do to support our workforce. We were aware that a lot of people weren't able to exercise or socialize in the same ways that they were able to do before. So we implemented a number of programs which supported sort of online exercise programs. We had a number of these sort of online social events so people could stay together, even though they were not physically together. For our personnel who needed to quarantine or those people who had extended swings on site, We extended our Better Sleep program to all personnel on our sites just so they could get some advice from a psychologist on how best to manage their sleep over those extended swings. And also we provided a check-in service for people in quarantine. So when people went into quarantine, we provided them with some resources, and then they would have a regular check-in with one of our EAP team during their stay just to make sure that they were well supported. And at the same time as we did that, our workforce who wasn't in quarantine came together to provide welcome packs and those sort of things for people who were in quarantine so that they had some resources, that they had somebody, a buddy that they could talk to and things to do while they were in that quarantine facility. So we saw a really great sort of coming together of our whole workforce to support those who were needing to go through these difficult periods.
Well, and I do have some questions to ask you about international and interstate quarantine and how you manage that at Chevron. But I want to get back to something you just said about the impact of the rosters, the impact of the change of what was a usual pattern to somebody's life and their family life or their life when they weren't at work. You know, as a bit of a time capsule question, because, you know, we're going to be reflecting on this for many years to come. What do you think? And you've given some indication of how thoughtful through welcome packs and things, but what do you think were the kind of range of initial reactions that you were seeing from the Chevron people? What did your team have to do from a mental health perspective to support people in the range of responses to very changed circumstances?
The initial impacts, I think, were mixed in that how this affected people depended on the individual and their circumstances. I think almost universally people underwent a period of immense change to their working life. And, you know, I mean, I've worked fly-in, fly-out myself prior to this role. And one of the benefits of that type of work is that you're able to schedule well in advance. I'll be off this period. We can do this. And then you make things that you can look forward to, be it, say, your family, going on a trip, you know, doing some activity in your leisure time. These things you look forward to, and they sustain us during more challenging times. And I think with COVID-19, you got this great deal of uncertainty about those periods, in that you obviously still do get time off, but the time off was at a totally different time, so all your plans were disrupted. And so I think that had a major impact. In our workplaces, in our office-based workplaces in Perth, we had people suddenly impacted by a need to work from home. It happened very abruptly, in that one day we were in the office, and then the next everybody was being asked to stay at home. And so we had to do things such as provide equipment and ergonomic resources to people without them having to come into the office. So they went out and purchased it themselves and set up their own home workspaces. And so these are huge changes for people. And I think there's a mixture of surprise or shock about what's happening, maybe a disbelief that, you know, this is happening in 2020 as it was, and also a great deal of uncertainty and, if you like, foreboding about what the future might bear, because we didn't know at the time what was coming or what was going to happen. I think those things all come together to increase people's stress, if you like, increase people's anxiety. And I think we needed to provide resources to people so that they could manage those feelings, they could come to terms with what was happening. And so we deliberately set out to provide a range of resources to our workforce, which addressed those concerns head on. And it could be something as simple as a written piece of information up to, you know, one-on-one psychological services with one of our providers. So we had that huge range of supports that we put in place. Personally, I find the supports we put in place were useful for myself and for my family in just discussing it with our kids and discussing it with my wife. Just giving that, and so I think that, you know, our workforce certainly found, you know, the feedback we got was that the resources were useful and that people were finding them helpful. So I think that was the initial reaction and our response to it.
Yeah, wow. I mean, just really hearing you answer that question really takes everyone back. And of course, when you talked about the workforce that are office-based having to work from home, it wasn't just the uncertainty of what that looked like. I think because of the huge amount of uncertainty, people were thinking, well, does that mean people have jobs anymore? What's going to happen with the economy? And it's so interesting now with a little bit of time and space that, you know, well, the Australian economy didn't collapse. Of course, there were changes in the industry based on commodity prices and all those sorts of things. But by and large, companies and the people within the workforces have generally just got on with the job, haven't we?
Well, that's right. Yes. And I think you say there were major economic shocks as well. You know, you see major impacts on commodity prices. At one stage, the oil price went into negative value, and this has major impact on the business that we're in. And you know, Chevron had taken some steps to prepare the organization for operation in sort of any environment. And so I think those steps were helpful during the pandemic. We'd already started down the path to being resilient to these kind of impacts. But I think you're right. I think this caused people to be concerned, you know, I'm working from home now. Am I going to be able to continue to work? Is there going to be work for us to do if our products are not selling? I mean, we have seen, thankfully, a recovery globally. And so that has, I think, relieved some of that anxiety more recently. But I think there's still a great degree of uncertainty, especially in places like Western Australia, where we are operating, where we've not really seen large numbers of cases of COVID-19. We've been protected by the very stringent border measures that have been put in place. And that's meant that we've been living in a essentially normal environment. So aside, and if you haven't
with all the impacts,
or over East, then you're pretty much going about your life as normal. Then there are very few people wearing masks around the place. People have to check into stores and things like that. But beyond that, the controls are not that visible for people. And so I think there is an anxiety now here that what's going to happen when the borders do open up and we do start seeing cases, how is that going to impact on us and our way of life here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll go there with the quarantine. You have alluded to identifying that as a significant challenge. And I understand that Chevron did something quite different to what other companies did in their approach, particularly for interstate quarantiners. Can you let us know what you did and how you approached it?
Yeah, so early on, we recognized that quarantine was going to be a very challenging process for essentially everyone that has to go through it. Anyone who's been through a quarantine process will know that 14 days in a room by yourself is very difficult. We're social beings. We're designed to be in touch with other people all the time. And so it's very challenging for us to be by ourselves. And even some of the things that we take for granted day to day, like access to fresh air and exercise and being able to move around, is challenging in a lot of quarantine environments. And so for our interstate and for a time, actually, our intrastate, so people moving around WA, personnel who were required to go to our sites, who were the majority of people that we had who were going into quarantine, we set about establishing a facility that would make that process as bearable as possible, so optimize it as best we could, and bearing in mind that, you know, people still have to be isolating from each other. You can't have that social contact. But we set up a facility at the Vines, which is one of the suburbs here in Perth, which provided our workforce with rooms, individual rooms, obviously, which had access to fresh air. They had a balcony, but they were separated from each other. And so there was no way for people to kind of come in contact with members of the public or each other in these facilities. And we also set about providing a facility for exercise. So we got special arrangements with the WA government, which allowed for our personnel in very controlled circumstances to go for a period of exercise each day out of doors, providing, you know, that they adhere to things like physical distancing, mask usage, and we had significant oversight from some medical and security perspective. So with that, we were able to provide a facility that allowed people to do quarantine, but at the same time allowed them to exercise and to get fresh air and to have some space to go through that process. So that, because of course, at the end of that quarantine period, they're going to go to our site and go to work for 2 weeks. And so we wanted people to be able to manage through that quarantine period as best they could, but also have been able to get good sleep and be physically ready to go to work, which I think is one of the huge challenges. If you're in quarantine, working straight away afterwards is difficult.
And of course, now we're hearing that people have how many times they've done quarantine over the last kind of 18 months. And I bet that that facility was the absolute talk of the town to have fresh air, because there was no open windows in majority of these quarantine facilities, let alone to be able to go at a time during the day and get some exercise outside the room. So really want to commend you and the Chevron team for putting that in place, because I know that it was the envy of many companies that you'd been able to make all of that happen. But a lot of what we've talked about now has been looking in the rear vision mirror about what you did and how you did it. And I'm really interested also in your perspective of moving forward. What are some of the things that you think that we have learnt during COVID-19 that will have short, medium and long-term applications beyond this very intense pandemic period?
We have learnt a few things during COVID. We've learnt, I think, that people can work in places outside of the office. and they can work in different ways, and that we can be in contact in different ways. And I think that's something that's going to that's accelerated a process that was already in place, but it really has forced us to get good at Teams meetings and WebEx, setting up our engagements in that way. I think from a technological perspective, from a medical perspective, it's really advanced our capabilities in terms of diagnosis of infectious diseases. You know, we have now got on our sites here in Western Australia, we've got on-site PCR capability that was unheard of in 2019. Right. Yeah. So we have the ability to rapidly diagnose infectious diseases on site. Obviously, with the advent of the vaccination program, we've gotten some advances in that space, and that we're potentially better able to handle future pandemics and some of the developing vaccinations and treatments for these sort of viral illnesses. So I think that helps us for the future. We've also needed, from a process point of view, we've also needed to, in health and medical, we've needed to look at new ways of working, which involve things like automation and artificial intelligence, because the volume of work that we would have been doing otherwise would have been overwhelming. So if you were talking about screening hundreds of people per flight to go to work sites, many flights a day in terms of some operators, you can't do that manually. It has to be done through some kind of automated process. And I think what you learn through that kind of automation can be applied in other parts of our work, which I think is a useful innovation. But I think fundamentally what we've found is that this is, if you like, a crisis. It was a crisis for everybody. And it impacted on everybody around the world, essentially. I don't think there's a person that won't have been impacted by COVID in some way or another. And I think as an organization, we've found that by focusing on our values, we've been able to do the best for people. Our values are protecting people, where we prioritize the physical and mental well-being of our workforce. We look for ways to mitigate the challenges of quarantine, of the uncertainty of whether a person who's got some symptoms on site has actually got COVID or not. We've looked for ways at every step to try and to address those. We've had to partner with the government. Our quarantine facility wouldn't have been possible without partnership from WA Police and the WA Health and the Chief Health Officer to set that up. Likewise, our suppliers have really upped their game in terms of provision of diagnostic equipment and diagnostic services and treatment services. We've now been able to start delivering vaccines on our sites, on our remote sites, which again is credit to our providers. And we've also found ourselves working as a trusted source of information for our workforce. We've provided information as best we can, aligned with the evidence. We've had a global team working through the information about the virus itself, about the treatments that have emerged, and about the safeguards that we can put in place. And we've attempted to provide clear messages to the workforce from a source that they can trust to enable them to make decisions around the virus and what they should be doing. That's been, for me, a great learning, is that just by focusing on those values, we've been able to deliver for our workforce and the organization.
Well, I really like that kind of perspective that you've provided us. And I particularly like you talking about being a trusted source of information, because I'm hearing that across the industry, that employees are feeling closer than ever to the company they work for, because they felt like they were looked after, they were given all the information, and that companies went above and beyond to protect safety and to help manage their mental health. That's a space we've touched on a few times, but I'd like to go into there a little bit more detail. But maybe looking forward again, like the last question, what are the areas of mental health and well-being that Chevron is looking to focus on into the future as it continues this protection and investment in its people?
We've had a mental health framework in place for a number of years now, which provides a mechanism for us to deliver mental health services and resources at various points along the spectrum, from people who are doing really well, they've got great mental health and they're flourishing, to people who are at maybe the other end of the spectrum who are struggling and perhaps have got some kind of mental health illness. And so we've long had a number of resources in those spheres. I think what has come from COVID in this space is that we've had a greater public awareness or public interest in mental health. We recently asked our workforce what area of social partnership partnership should we invest in? And overwhelmingly, they came back, we should invest in mental health, in community mental health. You know, that was out of all of the potential social partnerships. And so we've recently announced a partnership over here in WA with Zero to Hero, which is a local charity which specializes on providing resources and an opportunity for young people to learn how to communicate about mental health and become ambassadors. So that's a direct result from that interest in our workforce in that area. The other thing we've done over the past year is we've participated in AMA's Resources and Energy Industry Workforce and Leaders Mental Health Research Program. And that program has given us some great insights into the mental health issues that our workforce is dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And also really great insight into the type of resources that they value and that they want us to provide. And we've always found that asking our workforce what they want from a wellness program or what they want in terms of service is the best way of providing the services that people want rather than guessing. So this has given us some great insight and I think provides us with an opportunity to track things over time. So, you know, we can listen, we can implement new programs or improve the programs we currently have and see has that had an impact over time. So I think there's for the first time ever, we've got an industry-led benchmarking opportunity to see how we're performing against ourselves over time. That's been really useful. And then finally, we conducted a mental health risk assessment towards the end of last year. It allowed us to identify the psychosocial hazards that exist in all of our workplaces and identify what safeguards we had in place. So, you know, if you identify working at height, you've got a number of safeguards in place. It enabled us to link clearly the things we were doing for mental health back all the way to the hazard that existed and identify those areas where there was potentially opportunities for us to improve. But also, I think importantly, what it did for me was it highlighted the importance of things like our leadership behaviors and the impact they have on mental health. And I think one of the aha moments I had during this process was, you know, if you look at what makes a good leader, what makes a good manager of people in terms of delivering results and people thriving in the workplace and you know, good for the business, good for the bottom line, well, a lot of those things, in fact, all of those things that make people good leaders also improve the mental health of the workforce that they're leading. So things like setting clear expectations, providing feedback, building relationships, coaching, all of these things improve the mental health of the workforce. And we were very clearly able to line those up with the hazards that exist and show how these leadership behaviors act as safeguards. And I think that's been a very useful learning for us.
I think that's a great point to finalize that element of the conversation, making those direct causal links between leadership behaviors and the mental health of the team. And I really appreciate taking me on that journey of looking backwards, but then in the last section of our conversation, looking forward. From a Chevron perspective, and particularly from your functional perspective, is there anything going forward that you think potentially would not have happened if we didn't have the COVID-19 pandemic? You know, this additional focus on the controls, the acceleration of the trends that had already happened from a workplace flexibility perspective. Are there any of those things that you thought, you know, maybe, well, this is completely new and a whole new world?
I don't think so, Tara. And I think it's probably important to recognize that we were already on a journey in this respect before COVID-19 came along. I think, you know, certainly working with colleagues in the AMA Mental Health Advisory Board and in other forums where I've interacted with industry partners and colleagues, people have been on this journey now for some time. The interest in mental health and the kind of the concepts around that I don't think are new. I think COVID-19 brought it into stark relief and it really laid open the situation in a really amplified way. And it meant that some things I think that were moving along slowly got accelerated. And so I think that things like an industry-wide survey probably would have happened, but I think the reasoning for it and the speed at which it was done was accelerated by things like COVID-19. In terms of our services for the future, again, as I said, we've had this framework in place for a long time. It wasn't like we weren't providing any mental health services in the past. I think my focus is on provision of quality services. So I think that rather than, you know, huge numbers of services being available, we listen to what our workforce wants. And we know what they want is high quality face-to-face services that they can access. And so now that'll be my focus over the next few years in ensuring that we provide what people are looking for and make sure that when we are providing those services, that we're getting some good information back on what our people think of those services when they receive them, not what was wrong or they went, but just an overall view of what their feedback is. And I think from that feedback, we can improve. So that to me has been the sort of forward looking take on this.
Well, that sounds absolutely fantastic. And thank you so much for sharing Chevron's experience, your experience and your insights into really what's been an incredibly challenging time, but a lot of things have really come out of it. So thank you for joining us on Resource People Podcast, Dr. Max Hills.
That's been my pleasure. Thank you, Tara.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Resource People Podcast. It was wonderful to share this conversation with Dr. Max Hills with you and to hear about how Chevron has faced up to the challenges of the past nearly 2 years, in particular from a physical and psychological health perspective. Hope you enjoyed the episode and we look forward to you joining us next time on Resource People Podcast.
AMA acknowledges and pays respects to the traditional custodians of the land from which the Resource People Podcast was recorded from today, both the Turrbal and Yugara people. AMA acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which you are living, learning and listening to this podcast from today. We pay our respects to elders both past, present and emerging.
Thank you for listening to the Resource People Podcast. We look forward to you joining us next time as we highlight the many great stories of the resources and energy industry. If you have any questions about the podcast, please email media@ama.org.au. Produced by Brad Thompson.